History is messy. It's weird, wild, and anything but boring. Rainy Day Rabbit Holes is a history podcast about unhinged stories that make you stop and ask, wait, is this real life?
From crazy disasters and tasty scandals to enlightening and surprising heartwarming tales, we explore the moments where people behave badly and sometimes beautifully.
We've got naughty politicians, cultural chaos, and a deep love for the Pacific Northwest, including Bigfoot.
It's thoughtful, irreverent, occasionally serious, and always entertaining.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole.
MSW Media.
Insurance denied your claim? You don't have to take no for an answer. Free AI tools help patients write professional appeal letters when their insurance company denies their care. Whether you're fighting a prior authorization denial, a claim rejection, or being told the treatment isn't medically necessary, you can push back. In this episode of Care Talk, Neil Shah, the co-founder of Counterforce Health, talks about their free tools and resources to empower everyday people like you to challenge insurance denials. Welcome to Care Talk Live, a weekly American healthcare policy show and podcast where we explain how healthcare works or doesn't work and get you answers. I'm Laura Packard, cancer survivor and healthcare advocate, here to help you. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts to get future Care Talk shows. In today's episode, we break down what you can do when an insurance company denies your needed care. So welcome to Neil Shah, a co-founder of Counterforce Health. Their work is made possible through grants from the NIH and University of Pennsylvania. So welcome, Neil.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
So let's start with insurance company denials. What is an insurance company denial?
Sure. So a denial is when an insurance company refuses to cover or pay for something that you need, which would typically be a medication or a surgery or procedure, or after a thing like a hospitalization, an ER visit, et cetera. Unfortunately, this problem is becoming far too common. Last year, across approximately 5 billion total claims that were made for care in the country, almost one-fifth of them, or 850 million claims, were denied. You know, when you math it out, there's only 300 something million people in the country. So it's really the same people who are interacting with the healthcare system repeatedly are being denied a lot. But almost one in five American adults who did have health insurance had a claim denied last year. So, this is a very large magnitude problem.
Mm-hmm. And this actually happened to me twice. I was diagnosed with cancer in 2017, and my first hospitalization, the insurance company wouldn't cover it. So I actually had to go through the whole appeals process myself and write the letter and get letters from my doctor and so on. The second denial was after my first chemotherapy session. The insurance company wouldn't pay for the biologic drug I needed to recover after chemo. And I wound up with my second hospitalization, which thankfully insurance covered, and they covered the drug that I needed thereafter, because it turns out that even a wildly expensive drug is cheaper than a week in the hospital. So I remember vividly going through this process years ago while I was dealing with cancer, while I was dealing with chemotherapy, while I was dealing with being in and out of the hospitals. I had to deal with ever more threatening insurance letters and ginormous bills and insurance companies rejecting my care. So why do insurance companies do this? Is this just to make more profits?
Short answer, yes. But first of all, Laura, I'm really sorry to hear about your experience. I feel like this is very damning about our American healthcare system, that things like this are happening to you. I am a cancer co-survivor myself. My wife went through a very severe cancer battle from 2018 through better part of 2020. Actually, one of the reasons I started this effort at Counterforce Health is I was managing her care, and there were several major denials, including a big one for over a $30,000 hospitalization. as well as denials for surgery and then denials for medications. Infuriating. And I thought the problem was just happening to us. But over the subsequent years, as I've been doing a lot of work in caregiving, and actually my day job is running a large caregiving platform, helping many people care for spouses with serious illness or aging parents with illness, I've realized this problem is happening to tons more people, you know, and increasing every year. You know, so my short hypothesis is that this is happening for insurance company profits. I think a longer way to look at it is insurers have weaponized artificial intelligence over the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, and they've built very sophisticated AI systems that are programmatically denying care. And then the administrative burden is on the physician, which, by the way, you know, if you think most doctors aren't sitting around with a lot of extra time to spare, or on the patient, which most patients are also not sitting around with a lot of time to spare, or the family caregiver. So I think the denials are a roadblock because it's an unregulated market. There's no penalty for a denial that's unfair. So the insurers are doing whatever they can to get away with it. And then you have to take the effort to write an appeal, to push back, to call people, do research, et cetera. And most people are either don't have the time, don't know their rights, you know, don't even know how to begin to do it. So many times patients are appealing less than 1% of denied claims. So then as a result, the insurer just kind of gets away with, you know, pocketing the money. So yeah, I think this is a major problem. And until regulation catches up, I think people have to take matters in their own hands.
So let's talk about how do you do an appeal letter? I had never done this before, and so it was new to me. Tell us, what are the steps if insurance company denies your care or denies the care that you need?
Yeah, so I think one of the easiest way to do an appeal is, like, we built an AI system where you can do it for free and very fast, so you don't have to do a lot of research. But generally what would happen is you would get a denial with a specified reason. And I'd say kind of the most common reasons would be medical necessity, you know, which is where the insurer is saying, I don't think you need this, even though, by the way, the doctor, you know, kind of ordered it. So they're making a qualitative judgment, and the burden of, and this happens, I think, approximately over 40% of denials are due to medical necessity. You have to then make a research-backed robust argument based on medical literature of, like, why do you need this, based on your own medical history and health records of what's happened to you, you know, so kind of triangulating, proving that point. And then based on looking at your insurance policy and seeing that, hey, why should this be covered? So it's kind of a combination of, like, personal healthcare history, as well as, like, being a medical researcher and kind of being a lawyer. So as you can imagine, this is, like, very intimidating for a lot of people. So that's, like, the most common reason for denials. Another very common reason for denial is, like, incorrect billing code. That often happens after, like, hospitalizations, you know, after procedures, et cetera, where it's just been misclassified or miscoded by the healthcare system, and you have to fix that. That's another one where you have to go through billing code databases and fix it. And then, you know, that's over 25% of them. And then the remainder is kind of, like, other reasons, like out of network, et cetera. Those are a little bit harder to fight. But, you know, I would say, you know, so if you kind of add up the medical necessity and the billing code related denials, these are over 75, almost 80% of denials. And these are, I wouldn't say easily, but they are quite winnable if you simply bother to do the work. It's just most people don't have the time. Most people don't have the resources. Most people don't know where to begin. So I would suggest for anyone, please use the power of artificial intelligence to do the research for you. We have built a very easy system. Anyone can just go to www.counterforcehealth.org, and it's a grant-funded service that we're just giving away for free to people. And you can simply upload your denial letter, upload any background or relevant healthcare information, and the AI system will parse through all that, will browse through journals, you know, will think through logic, will even find your policy coverage document if you haven't uploaded it, and we'll craft a very, like, well-reasoned appeal for you. But if people don't want to use that, or if people, you know, don't have access to that, you know, use ChatGPT, use Google Gemini, use anything. But I think that one of the biggest impediments is people are simply not taking the action to appeal because they're intimidated. And if you did this manually, this might take you hours and hours of research. So I kind of get it, you know, why people don't want to do it. But AI can help you do this, or at least help you get 90%, 95%, 99% of the way there, which I think is really a powerful tool. And what I love is just, like, democratizing access to these tools, because the insurance companies have been using this against the patients for a while, and it's time to, you know, put the power back in patients' hands.
Thanks. So can you repeat that URL one more time so people know where they can start for free to start an appeal?
Yeah, sure. So it's counterforcehealth.org. You know, we kind of wanted to give it a good name of like fight the system. So counterforce health, health.org. And you can kind of like Google it and look for it on there. And then it's just like very simple. You can type in your info, upload your docs. You know, it's a privacy oriented platform. We have it funded, grant funded through National Institutes of Health and University of Pennsylvania. And then, yeah, you can just get a very detailed, robust appeal. And then from there on, what we find most patients are just kind of like taking it and then sending it to the insurer. Some patients will actually modify it. Some patients will have, you know, their physician or provider look at it. Sometimes even the providers are using the tools. We've had tons of clinics and even rural hospitals use the tools. So it's kind of interesting to see. You know, we just put it out there as a social impact project, and it's really interesting to see how people are using it. And by the way, I would say, you know, I initially started this thinking, oh, people are going to appeal $300 medication denials or, you know, minor procedure for $1,000. We had a elderly lady living in rural Illinois who had kidney cancer, had to get her tumor removed, and the surgeon fought with the insurer and lost appeal twice. $50,000 procedure, by the way, lost the appeal twice. Her husband happened to randomly hear about it on the radio that, oh, there's like a social impact org that's giving a free AI tool. So they randomly went to the site, used the tool, submitted and won the appeal. And she has a tumor out. It was a microwave ablation procedure. What I thought was interesting about that kind of story is like, I was surprised that, you know, the system was like good enough to win a $50,000 case. I was also surprised that the surgeon was trying and had lost. But, you know, to me, it shows that the doctors, despite their best intentions, they don't have hours and hours. Like the letter that the AI wrote, this would have taken, even an informed person, it would have taken 8+ hours to research all this information and kind of prove out the logic based on, you know, medical literature and based on our own health record, why this is absolutely necessary. So I think this is kind of like a cool way where you can have AI do work for you very fast. The system generated this in 2 minutes, by the way. So yeah, it's kind of like a cool use case. So I would say, yeah, the biggest thing is for people to simply take action and try to appeal. Many people just kind of let these things go unappealed, and I think that's a disaster.
Absolutely. And I remember how many hours it took me to do my health insurance appeal. I really could have used a tool like this. So again, that's counterforcehealth.org to start your free tool using AI, which insurance companies are using AI against you. This is your opportunity to use AI to fight for your healthcare. Any last thoughts for our viewers?
I would say kind of beyond the tool, like I hope personally this tool is not needed, you know? So I think the main thoughts would be advocate for yourself. You know, like we are trying to build more advocacy campaign. Obviously reach out to me anytime, you know, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn and other socials, but I've been thinking about making this a big issue in front of government because it's like going on and the situation on the ground is getting worse. You know, I thought certainly with all the investigations into like United Health last year, you know, I thought that there would be going to be some big insurance reform, and I feel like nothing's really happening. So, and on the ground, a lot of people are getting really upset with it. So, you know, we are heading into 2026 midterm elections. You know, I think, by the way, this is a bipartisan issue. Like I think the health insurance company doesn't care if you're a Republican or Democrat, you know, they're denying everyone's claims. And, you know, every one of us, you know, has gone through serious illness. We know somebody who's gone through cancer. We know somebody that's had a stroke. I mean, you know, literally people are getting denied left and right. So I think we need to really get loud and advocate for systemic change here because I think this is getting out of hand. So yeah, I would say beyond just using the tools, let's try to get patients, family caregivers, others, you know, even providers together and push back. You know, I think one thing I was hoping is that by 2026 midterms, a lot of providers would run for office, you know, both on the Republican and Democrat side, because they know firsthand what it's like working in the healthcare system. You know, in some of the work we do, caregiving for the aging population, all the care providers are healthcare students. And I think that, you know, young people across America are watching, and they're watching and they're saying, why should I become a doctor if half my job is going to be fighting a health insurance company and I'm powerless? You know, I can't do what my patient needs. Then you got young doctors leaving the field because they're getting so sad. Can you imagine this lady's doctor who, if he was not allowed to remove the tumor, it's like, and then she dies, you know, it's like, who wants to practice medicine? So I think the insurance companies have gotten too large, too out of control, too powerful, and not enough people are pushing back. And I think that the large segment of the population is greater in power than a handful of insurance companies. So I would like to build an advocacy movement.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Neil Shaw with Counterforce Health. And just a reminder, we have free or low-cost healthcare resources available on our website at healthcarevoices.org/caretalk. So check it out. And there's a link to Counterforce Health there as well. So please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. And now our experts will answer your health insurance questions. So welcome to Louise Norris, health insurance and healthcare reform analyst at healthinsurance.org, and Diane Archer, the founder of JustCare and senior advisor on Medicare to Social Security Works. So first, Diane, let's talk about appeals and Medicare and Medicare Advantage.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything that Neil said, that oftentimes the insurers are denying care when they shouldn't, and it's getting worse. We just learned in Medicare Advantage that the insurers are going to be relying even more heavily on AI. And what that is code for is they will be trying as hard as possible to deny as many claims as possible in order to boost their profits. They're right now suffering because of they're claiming that their payment isn't high enough. And the way around that for them is to make up for that as best they possibly can by using AI to do more across the board denials. So watch out if you're in Medicare Advantage. I want to talk a little bit though about traditional Medicare, which is the government administered side of Medicare. And there you do have a lot of great protections. The way traditional Medicare works, if you opt for it, and you still can, I should note here that it's still the Medicare Advantage open enrollment period where people in Medicare Advantage can switch to traditional Medicare. In traditional Medicare, if a doctor provides you with a service, you are not responsible for the cost of that service. It is the provider's responsibility if Medicare ends up denying the cost and payment to the doctor. And there is no prior authorization. So you're not going to be in a situation where a doctor is saying, I can't believe it, Medicare won't pay, because Medicare always pays for medically necessary services that the doctor recommends. And so you will never be responsible. But there is a hitch that I wanted to focus on, and that's for people, for example, getting skilled nursing facility care and other types of care, home care sometimes, rehab care, where the government pays a flat fee to the provider for care. And in those cases, what people will experience is situations where the provider says Medicare won't pay for your care upfront. And then they ask the patient to pay upfront for the care themselves and to agree to pay privately. And the problem there is that Medicare actually will cover the care, but the provider, the nursing facility or the rehab facility, is worried that it won't. And so to protect itself financially, it makes the patient pay or agree to pay upfront for the care. And so otherwise, if they provide care, as I mentioned, if a provider provides care, then the patient is not responsible. So this is why they do this. And so what you need to know is that if you are told by a skilled nursing facility, for example, that Medicare will not cover your care, do not accept that as truth. If you qualify, your doctor says that you are eligible because you've been hospitalized for 3 days, at least in the 30 days prior to admission, then you need daily skilled services, then you need to demand bill Medicare. You need to tell the nursing facility that you want them to bill Medicare, which they are obligated to do. Same with the home health agency or the rehab facility. And then you may end up finding that your care is covered, but that the provider is simply trying to protect itself. And in the process, you're being told that your care won't be covered. So just another way to make sure that you are covered for the care you're entitled to under Medicare. Always question the provider if the provider says Medicare doesn't pay, because there may be a reason other than the fact that Medicare doesn't pay for the fact that they're telling you it doesn't pay.
Thank you, Diane. And next question is from Morrison on Facebook, who wants to know why Welly Healthcare doesn't cover my inhaler and what to do. Louise.
Yes. So the issue here is that Welly Healthcare is not insurance, which may or may not have been understood at the time of enrolling in it. Welly Healthcare is a primary care membership program that employers can offer to their employees either on its own or in conjunction with actual health insurance, because it can be a good supplement to a health insurance policy. Basically, it provides you access to a wide range of primary care services that you don't have to then pay for at the time that you get the services. So if you have a health plan with a high deductible, this membership can, you know, help to reduce your costs basically when you need primary care. But it is not going to cover things like prescriptions, such as a prescription inhaler. So, and it is definitely not adequate to be your only coverage, because again, it is not health insurance. So if you have a health insurance policy, either that that same employer offered you or that you purchased on your own, in addition to your Welly Healthcare membership, you can just run the claim for the inhaler through your actual health plan, which should cover it. Obviously, it depends. You need to be at an in-network pharmacy, and you need it needs to be an inhaler that's on your health plan's covered drug list. Not all inhalers are on all plans' covered drug lists. So if you have a health insurance policy, that's the way to go. If you do not have anything, any actual health insurance, and your only coverage is this Welly Healthcare primary care program, then for the time being, first of all, I would say work on fixing that at the next open enrollment period. Either if your employer also offers a health insurance policy, you can sign up for that during your employer's open enrollment period. If not, you can sign up for coverage in the individual market. The next open enrollment for that starts November 1st. But for right now, you can talk to your doctor or your pharmacist about whether there might be any coupons, like manufacturer coupons or patient assistance programs, that could help to make your inhaler less expensive. You could also talk to your doctor about whether switching to a different inhaler, a different brand or a different type of inhaler might make it less expensive, or there might be one that has, for example, a coupon or a patient assistance program available just to help make that more affordable. So your doctor and or your pharmacist will be able to answer questions you have about that. And then again, making sure that you do have health insurance in place as soon as possible at the next open enrollment period.
Thank you, Louise. Our next question is Sandy from Facebook, who says that I'm low income and have UHC dual complete. Can I switch to regular Medicare and get coverage that I don't have to pay for? Diane?
Important question, Sandy, and absolutely you should be able to. The good news for people who have both Medicare and Medicaid is that when you enroll in traditional Medicare, you have your out-of-pocket costs covered through Medicaid. So traditional Medicare is your primary coverage, and you can see any doctor that takes Medicare patients, and then you want to see a doctor who takes both Medicare and Medicaid, and all your costs should be covered in full. The other good news is not only is this the Medicare Advantage open enrollment period, which allows anybody, if you have Medicare only or if you have Medicare and Medicaid, to switch out of Medicare Advantage and into traditional Medicare. Starting the following month, the first of the following month, if you have Medicare and Medicaid, each month you're allowed to move out of a Medicare Advantage special needs plan, which is, I believe, the kind of plan you're in right now, into traditional Medicare and get your care covered that way. And of course, the advantage of being in traditional Medicare is that it is a public insurance program that covers the care that your doctors, treating physicians say you need, and you have a huge group of treating physicians across the country who will cover your care. And there will not be, in almost any instance, prior authorization delays or inappropriate denials of care. So you have much easier access to care, and you can get coverage pretty much anywhere in the country. So yes, you can switch, and you should have full out-of-pocket protection. But just to be sure, I would suggest that you contact your state health insurance assistance program and walk through your situation with somebody there. It's free assistance. And the number is 1-877-839-2675. Again, 1-877-839-2675. Or you can go online to shiphelp.org. shiphelp.org for information about your rights to switch into traditional Medicare.
Thank you, Diane. And our next question is from Any Classroom on Reddit, who wants to know, if I have new insurance and go to a new gastroenterologist, do I have to report that I've previously had a colonoscopy? How will they know? I had one 6 years ago and it was preventative, but they removed a polyp and it was, so it was covered 100%, but I want to avoid the next colonoscopy from being coded as diagnostic, which would have costs as opposed to preventative would be covered free with insurance. Louise?
So I get it. I really get where you're coming from. And I think this is a really common situation, because when you go in for that first colonoscopy, that where there, if you don't have any symptoms and you're just going in for the first one because you're 45 years old or you haven't had one in the past and you're just going in on a regular schedule, on almost all health plans, it's entirely covered, meaning you don't pay anything. And that continues, that's true even if they find a polyp. But if they find a polyp, they're going to advise you to come back in 3 years or 5 years, whatever it's going to be, sooner than the normal 10-year, every 10-year schedule. And the only colonoscopies that are fully covered, paid for fully by your health insurance, are the routine preventive ones, which means no symptoms, no issues, and you're just coming in every 10 years. So I get it. I know that in this situation, if you go back after 6 years because a polyp was found previously, your health plan is going to use whatever your regular cost sharing for your plan is. So your deductible, coinsurance, depends on the plan in terms of how much you might have to pay. But depending on the plan you have, you might be paying the full cost of the colonoscopy. Of course, it would be the network negotiated price with your health plan. So it's not like you're going in and paying the full retail cost of the colonoscopy. You're not paying the full amount they bill. You're paying the full amount that your insurance company approves, but depending on the structure of your plan, it could be up to that amount. That said, it is never a good idea to not be truthful with your medical team. This is your life. This is your health. Keeping things from your doctor about your medical history is never going to be in your best interest. So I really do hear where you're coming from, but I would never advise trying to keep your medical history from your provider. And it's also important to note that most GI doctors are now, their practices are owned by big healthcare systems and hospitals. Independent GI doctors are increasingly rare. So there's a good chance that your medical records are just in the hospital system anyway, and they'll just already have it when you get there. But even if they don't, I would really recommend that you be truthful with them, tell them show them the records from your previous colonoscopy so that they know exactly what they're dealing with, and then can give you the best care that's possible. If you can be upfront with them and explain, hey, you know, my concern here is that I'm going to have to pay all of this out-of-pocket costs from my health plan and see if you can set up a payment plan with the GI doctor and the lab that that does any, if there's any more polyps removed. But that is going to be a better approach long term than trying to withhold information from your medical provider.
Thank you, Louise. And thank you, everyone, for joining us to learn more about how healthcare works or doesn't work in America. So please be sure to check out our free healthcare resources that are on our website at healthcarevoices.org/caretalk. And please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. Join us next week for more Care Talk. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Laura Packard, and this is Care Talk.
I'm Brian Karam, and I've spent decades covering politics. Now I'm taking you behind the scenes, one interview at a time.
Join us as each week Brian confronts the issues that matter, posing the questions you wish you could ask. No filter, no agenda, just the truth.
We're not here for sound bites. We're here for substance. Join me, Brian Karam, every week as we cut through the noise and get straight to it. This is Just Ask the Question. Curiosity will lead us to the facts.
Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform. And remember, when you want answers, all you have to do is just ask the question.